I want to do a quick survey here again before we start, and that is, I want to know who's present here has been married the longest. Now, before you answer, I want to be sensitive to everybody. I have individuals that say, listen, I was married for 48 years. My wife died. I've been single. I was single for about 3 years. I've remarried, and I've been married now for about 3 years. And they wanted to add all that time up together. So here's a way. Who has been married the longest continuously to the person you're married to now? I don't care if it's happily or not, you know. But who's been married here the longest? Anybody more than 50 years? 50 years? How many?
63.
Oh, 63. Barely a rookie. How many? 62. By the way, I want you to see, it was easy for Dan to say it, but I just want you to see, for you younger guys, I want you to see a veteran, okay? He didn't flinch. He didn't look right. He didn't look left. He just looked straight and just said, 62. Now, you can get in trouble, because one time I said, been married 33 wonderful years. And Tammy goes, you've been married 34. And I said, well, one of them was miserable. Okay, so you can get yourself out of it. The other is not to say anything and immediately turn to her, put her on the hot seat. So a great deal. Well, here's what we're going to do, Dan, is we're going to, here you go. 63, here's the representative of the his and hers for your for just a reminder.
Ask Johnny Davis how long has he been married. Is Johnny here?
How long, Johnny? I just told you how to do that, and you went, however, I will admit, she did it this way. She goes, 62? Okay, that was good. I like that. That was sweet and innocent. So, there you go. By the way, those are both left feet. I don't know what commentary that has. Let's go the other end real fast. Who's been married here the least amount of time? And it does have to be happily. Okay? How long?
A year and 8 months.
A year and 8 months. The only thing that would have been better is if he had given us the days, hours, and minutes of that. Anybody beat, there you go. Anybody beat a year and 8 months? Okay, so here you go. Here's yours just because they don't know what's coming yet, okay? So, for both those who have been married a long time and have stuck with it and those who are just getting started, may I just say my commendation to all of you, right? All right, we're going to talk about, as I said, Tammy and I made a list of some things because our seminars take different forms. Sometimes they're Friday night, Saturday. Sometimes they're an all-day Saturday. Sometimes we have more breakout time. Sometimes we have, we've actually done this as part of a vacation Bible school where it was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So as it grows, there's constantly new things that we're feeling are important to say. And so we just made a list of what we think are some really important. You know, I mentioned last night that there are so many couples looking for happily ever after, and we just want to talk, I just want to share a little bit about what finding happily forever after looks like, or some of the things that are important. And the first of these is a first of importance, and I don't say that because this is in a church building and it's hosted by a church. I'm saying it because I'm confident. If you don't remember anything else that we share, I want you to listen and hear this. Because I believe that this has the most significant, the most immediate, the longest lasting value for all marriages, and that is a God-first, God-centered marriage. Now for many, and I heard a couple of amens, that's okay, but for a lot of people that means, well, I'm a Christian, my wife's a Christian, we both believe in God, we both follow Jesus, we read our Bible every day, we go to church, we go to all of church. That means we go to Wednesday night church, we go to gospel meetings. Sometimes when our church doesn't have a gospel meeting, some other church goes, we go there, we go to all the church, we do all those things. We don't lie, we don't cheat, we don't steal, we don't cheat on one another, all those kinds of things. And so we have a God-first, God-centered marriage. But the truth is, it's a little bit more than that. First of all, a God-first, God-centered marriage is according to God's design. And this is what God's design. God's desire, God's design was one marriage, one woman, one man, one lifetime. Now, there are things that interfere in that. I think that there are some conditions within God's covenant that permits that marriage being dissolved as a result of unfaithfulness. It's for another discussion. But I do know this. It has always been His desire and His design, one man, one woman. And some of those alternative lifestyles, simply put, it's not fair to call them a marriage. They're not according to the design. They don't, and it's a lot more than the bumper sticker that says, God said Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. That oversimplifies a complex issue, but I'm convinced of this. One man, one woman, if you will, those are the appropriate pieces along with God in the process. It also has to be assembled according to God's directions. Ladies, you might not know this about men. We don't like instructions. We like to have, in fact, we pride ourselves on being able to put together the bicycle on Christmas Eve without the use of any directions whatsoever. And it's an extra bonus if we have parts left over. I mean, that's why we have garages to keep all of our extra parts. So we think we put it all together, and that's what happens sometimes in marriages. A couple goes, one man, one woman, one lifetime, and we know what the instructions are, but our situation's a little bit different. Little unique, that may not work for us, and so we put it together the way we see fit. And when we are going down, or our marriage is going down the hill at 90 miles an hour, and we go to apply the brakes, we go, wait, that's what that bolt was for, right? And it comes apart. But it not only is according to His design and put together, but as I said, it has to be for His purpose. Now, I don't know about you men, but in my toolbox today, I have some tools that were passed down from my father. And the one that is a prized possession is a butter knife with the end burned off of it. He used it as a screwdriver when working on the dryer that was still plugged in, and he put it across two of the contacts and burnt the end off that butter knife. Whenever we had company, only 7 people could put butter on their roll because the other one was... Now, the butter knife in a pinch made a pretty good screwdriver. But do you know what makes the best screwdriver? There we go. Okay, I'm just seeing if you're still here. A screwdriver. And when we use a marriage for something other than what it was intended, and we've already talked about it, just for happiness, just for procreation, just for, we're using it in a way it was never intended to work. In fact, it doesn't work very well at all. A God-first, God-centered marriage. Number 2, we have come to learn that love is not about what you get, it's about what you give. That love, as defined by God, is a choice action, a self-emptying of oneself for the sake of someone else. In other words, it's about sacrifice. Any Bible student will think of sacrifice in one of 2 ways. They'll think of the animal sacrifices of the Jewish people as part of their God-given instruction, which by the first century, one historian said, the blood ran through Jerusalem like the river Kidron. There were so many sacrifices. Not really Hallmark romantic material, right? Or we think of that greatest expression of love ever when Jesus was offered as a sacrifice on the cross for you and I. Again, probably doesn't pang at the heartstrings the way, or pluck at the heartstrings the way that you and I would think romantic love does. But it is about sacrifice. It's about seeking other. It's about seeking their well-being. It's about serving them. It's about you are greater than I am. It doesn't mean that I'm a lesser when I say she's a greater. I mean she's of greater importance. It's that outdoing one another in good. The only time this doesn't work is Sunday after church, when it's time to go eat lunch. And as a loving husband, you say, where would you like to go? And she says, no, I don't care. Oh, no, you pick. She goes, oh, no, you pick. And I said, no, you pick. She says, no, you above me, you pick. And finally I said, I don't care about you. I don't care about your children. I'm going to eat, right? That's the only time it doesn't work, but the rest of the time, it's trying to outdo. We all understand this. We just forget it. Because we forget that there's more to gain out of giving than there is out of getting. That there's something reciprocal, that when we spend our entirety of life seeking to serve the other, it actually comes back. This is some kind of prosperity gospel, but I'm telling you, I remember when Tammy and I were in the school of preaching as students. We had a family of seven. We had $800 a month, and you know the dump we lived in, right? Because that's where Emily used to live, right? We moved into a little brick house, 700 square foot, and we didn't have much, and we were barely getting by, and somebody came up to us, and they gave us, the local grocery store did these gift certificates. Actually, they sold them as fundraisers for the school, and you paid 20, but they were worth 25, and somebody came and gave Tammy and I a couple of them, maybe three of them, $25 each. So we're at the store doing some shopping, and we go by a family. I say a family. It's a mother and two kids. The little boy is wearing cowboy boots and a Superman cape and shorts. The girl was wearing like those rain boots. I call them galoshes, but they're those rain boots. And this was before everybody spent $300 on rain boots for the summer. And she's got this little pink tutu on. And they're going through the frozen foods. And they have tried to corner their mom at the ice cream. They want ice cream. And you looked and she had like a frozen pizza in her basket and a gallon of milk. You could tell that this was a shopping trip of necessity, not fun. And she goes, "We can't get ice cream today." It was obvious that that was outside of what her budgetary constraint was. So the little boy and the little girl disappointed, but they kind of advance ahead of their mom and come around the aisle. And Tammy says, "Would it be all right if I gave them one of those gift certificates?" And I responded, "Only if I get to give them one too." Now, I'm not here to talk about Tammy and I and how generous we were. I want you to know what happened. So we give them the gift certificates and said, "These are for your mom, but you tell her that you get to get ice cream, okay?" And they go, "Really?" So they go around and we kind of peered around and they hand them to her. We couldn't hear what was being said. You could obviously tell that she was touched by it. And they got to pick out ice cream. Can I tell you right now, I can't buy $50 worth of that kind of joy. Not to mention what all they were blessed with by that. You may not can tell this, but it won't hurt me to miss a meal now and then. I'm loading up for winter as it is. But for that moment, I began to understand something contrary to what the world says. The world says it's about you. It's about what you get. It's about what you deserve. It's about what you don't deserve. All those kinds of things. And sometimes it messes with our head and we forget the simple principle from Ephesians chapter 5, submit to one another. That's what true love really is. It requires us to be like Jesus who gave his all for us. Number three, communication is essential. We truly could have spent this entire weekend spoken about nothing but communication and not done the subject justice because communication is so important in a marriage. In fact, if you think about it, communication has been part of your relationship with your spouse since before they were your spouse. Now, it might have been the nonverbal communication of a glance across a crowded gymnasium floor, but eventually someone had to cross that floor and say, "Hi, my name is. Would you like to go out for pizza? Would you like to go to the movie?" Then that was that conversation of where you get to know one another. Finally, there's that all-important communication, "Will you marry me?" And the even more important conversation, "I will," right? Then you continue to get to know one another as you anticipate the wedding. Tammy and I, very short engagement. I had to call her about 2 months into our engagement. I said, "I got an embarrassing question to ask my fiance." And she goes, "What in the world?" I said, "What's your middle name?" I did not know it. It was a lot of conversation. And then we get married, and for whatever reason, the communication starts to fall apart. I think it's simply because we're not intentional about it anymore. And there are certain things, for example, like the statement, "I love you," that falls off the radar because, well, they already know I love them, right? So we don't say it. And so communication struggles, and here's the problem about bad communication. Number one, it causes problems, and number two, it makes other problems harder to resolve if there's bad communication or no communication. And so I want to share just a couple of things to help you improve your communication, because this is how important it is. Especially verbal communication, it is so important that we have taken some words in our English language and boiled them down to a letter because of how powerful words can be. When I was a boy, my mom would say, because I often would be picked on because of my size, sticks and stones will break your bones, but words can never harm you. Now, my mother is not inclined to being a liar, but that's a lie. Because sometimes I'd have rather been punched in the nose than called the names that I was called. To be berated verbally like that. Words are powerful. Jesus' half-brother James, in his epistle, he describes it this way. He said, it appears to be small. Some argue that the tongue is actually the strongest muscle in the human body. Tammy says it's because mine gets the most exercise, but I don't know if that's the case. But that it is small, but like the small rudder on a ship, it can turn the entire vessel. That to master it is like being the rider on a horse with bit and bridle and reins that controls the mouth of that beast and controls the whole animal. He says, if you can master the tongue, it doesn't master everything else, but the other pales in comparison. He goes, it is a fountain that can blurt out both good and bad, and it seems as if he implies on a moment's notice. It is a small spark that can set an entire forest aflame. The tongue is a powerful, powerful thing, and it really is powerful when it comes to marriage. So here's some suggestions. Number one, and that is, fill your vocabulary with good things. You leave less room for the bad things. If your words are filled with the I love you, I appreciate you, thank you, even if it's for the most mundane of things, maybe it is that it needs to be the I'm sorry, or even I apologize. Some time back, I told Tammy, I said, man, I have an inclination to get migraine headaches. I said, man, I feel a migraine headache coming on, and it's coming on fast. And she goes, I'm sorry. I said, well, it's not your fault. She goes, I didn't say it was my fault. I'm not apologizing. Sometimes we need to go beyond I'm sorry to I apologize, right? And we need to have that response that's good that says, well, I forgive you. I understand. Maybe it is that I've never had to do it in real life, but I will for the sake of illustration here, say something like, well, I was wrong. Okay, and if your spouse comes to the point of saying that, the proper response is not, I know, right? My wife, somebody's told me something about Tammy being smarter than me. I said, let me just tell you right now, of all the men in the world she could pick, she picked me. And of all the women in the world, I picked her. Who do you think is smarter? They go, yeah, you got me there. But she's made a bad she makes bad decisions, right? Her tongue got her in trouble. She said, I do, and now look what she's stuck with. So it's a powerful thing. But the more good, the things that you can put back in your vocabulary, it simply put leaves less room for the bad. Secondly, and that is to set aside what we call a safe zone, a time and place where you can communicate about a problem without it escalating, where two reasonable people can talk openly, frankly, but yet fairly, they can respond without reacting. That's not when, as one comedian puts it, the wife grabs the husband by the ear, drags him to the middle of the bedroom, pointing to a pair of underwear on the floor, and says, are those yours? To which he responds, well, I certainly hope so. Right? That moment of infraction, tensions are high. That's not the time. When he thinks she should have done something she didn't, she thinks he should have done something he didn't, that's not the time to deal with it. You need to take a step back. You need to be careful and then say, we need to talk about this, but not right now. Tammy and I don't have communication issues in our family, except keeping the neighbors from hearing about it. And the reason why is we're both talkers. Now, I could say this. If in your relationship, one of you is the talker and the other more is the listener, listener, speak up and speak your mind every once in a while. And if you are the talker in your relationship, hush, please. And if you're both talkers, pray. Just pray. That's all I can say. But the idea is this, that there are times that are appropriate for a discussion, and when you're in the end of the day, when you're all tired, not necessarily the best time to carry on a serious conversation. First thing in the morning, night's rest, birds are singing, sun is shining, and you go, you know what, there's some things we need to talk about. When the family's gathered at the table in front of friends, with few exceptions in front of the kids, though we think it's okay for those discussions to take place in front of kids a little bit so they understand what mommy and daddies do to work through their issues, but sometimes they're used as pawns and a conversation is more serious than they need to be dealing with. But find a time and place and say, hey, do you remember what? For Tammy and I, it's in a car. Let me tell you how a car ride of any great length. This last couple of days, we drove down, flew into Fort Lauderdale, went down to Miami, came back up here. It was a pretty pleasurable drive. But sometimes we're driving from Oklahoma City to Abilene, Texas, the non-scenic route of America. Okay, there is nothing to see there. And so I guess out of boredom, we begin to talk. And it's, hey, look at this. What do you think about this? Somewhere about midway, it's, well, really? I hate you and your mother. I mean, that's how it goes. It escalates in there as we run things. And by the end, things get more peaceable, mainly because we have to go into the marriage seminar and tell everybody how not to verbally abuse one another. But what we found is that in that space, we've got to talk it out. In fact, sometimes we yell it out until we get it worked out. Problem is, Tammy's, I set it, I lay it out on the table, I'm done. I set it out on the table and I'm done. And then when I find out she's done, I go, well, if you're done, then I've got some other things I'd like to say. And I do it like a preacher does it. There are three reasons why you're wrong. Point number one, I always throw a poem in at the end, but it's always the same kind of sermon in that. But we have to sit and have a conversation. And I will tell you that there's some times that we go, enough. We need to talk about this later. I've got just enough time to tell you about the title of our book, Soulmates. When Tammy and I pulled together our seminar material and put it into a book form, I said, we got to come up with a title for the book. Tammy suggested Her Boot in His Behind, a motivational kind of seminar. No, she didn't really. So I said, Soulmates, S-O-L-E, kind of playing off the sole of a shoe. And she goes, I think that's dumb. She goes, nobody's ever going to get it. Nobody's going to ever. I understand it's a play on the word, sole of a shoe. And so we kind of tabled it. We came back. I said, hey, we're getting close. We're going to need a title for that. So I said, I'd like to just kick out that idea of soulmates again. And she goes, I told you. Nobody's going to ever make that connection. It doesn't make any sense. I'll just tell you, rarely do I wow her, okay? But on this occasion, I made one statement, and it wowed her. I said, I'm not just talking about S-O-L-E like the sole of a shoe. Oops, I knew I was going to do that earlier. I mean the soul, S-O-L-E, singular mate. And she went. She goes, it never had resonated. By the way, she hates the title of the book, okay? But it's Soulmates because she's my one and only, and I sent it to the publisher without getting her approval. So anyway, that's how it, but we had conversations that went like this, but there were some times that we went, this is getting heated. We need to take a step away. That's what it means to have a safe zone. The third is, simply put, to learn a new language. Now, I'm not talking about French or German or Spanish, but what I'm saying is, if Tammy and I decided we wanted to go to France. Now, when I was in junior high, I took a French class. She looked at her watch. She says, "You're getting off on a lot of stories there. I'm doing good. I'm doing good." But I said, I took a little French, and I can remember five phrases from my French class in seventh grade. So if we were going to go to France, we'd have to take one of those courses. We'd have to do something online, one of those training courses to learn French. And we would probably get to France, and nobody would know what we're talking about. And the reason why is because conversational French is a little bit different than what you learn in one of those books. But do you know who I'd be able to talk clearly to? Her. We learned the same vocabulary. We learned the same thing about syntax and grammar. We learned French together. And so our version of French, we could talk. But the problem is that we talk, well, first of all, she talks Okie and I talk English. Those two are not the same. She talks woman, the most difficult language that has ever been constructed. Yes means no, and no at times means yes. It's confusing. And I speak man. She struggles with it. The easiest language that I think that ever was created. Single syllable words and an occasional, okay? It's easy, but we don't speak it, so we spend our entire communication life trying to translate each other. All I can ever think of is I was 8 years old, because I know exactly when it was. My grandfather worked for the Holly Sugar Company. They take and grow sugar beets, and they extract sugar from them and produce it into white sugar that you get in packets. But he was over the fields. He was a field manager, but he didn't handle the employees, the field workers, most of whom were Hispanic. My grandfather did not speak a single word of Spanish at all. I mean, he couldn't even say guacamole, okay? I mean, he couldn't speak Spanish at all. But occasionally, one of those field workers would come to his house, maybe wanting their paycheck. And I remember my grandfather standing on the porch, and he goes, this is him trying to speak to them, "No checky hero." He thought if he put some kind of an ending on it, he was speaking their language. And they're going, "Me no understand," okay? And that's what happens. Tammy and I are standing on the porch of life, her speaking woman, I'm speaking man, going, "Me no understando." And that's what most couples go through. So what we need is a new language. This is the language we suggest. Go to 1 Corinthians chapter 13, that so-called love chapter. It's really not as much about love as it is about spiritual gifts, but there is a lesson there. That's where love is patient, love is kind, all of those explanations of marriage, of love. And I'm convinced, since all of those are verbs, they're all actions, then they should permeate our language. You want to know what the real love language is? It's not words of affirmation and physical touch. Those aren't love languages. The love language is 1 Corinthians chapter 13, when our conversation looks like that. Think of it this way. Our communication is patient. What if we gave our first thought a second look before we said it? What if we were slower to speak and quicker to listen in our communication? How different. Have you ever said something and went, "Probably shouldn't have said that, but at this point I'm going to defend a bad position, right? Because I've already let it out of my mouth." What if our conversation was kind? What if we eradicated all of those? I remember early in our marriage one time, Tammy said, and she loved my father, she said, "You're acting like your dad." She didn't mean it at that time complimentary. I went, "Well, thank you." I thought it was a compliment, right? But sometimes we have those things that are, "Well, really? And your mother dresses you funny." What if you took and all conversation was only kind expressions? What if we had conversation that didn't keep an account of wrongs that were suffered? It didn't have those, "Well, you remember when," or "You did this before," all those kinds. What if it was a conversation that did not seek its own? What if it was a conversation that was not easily provoked? not easily provoking, was not easily poked, didn't always field attack, automatically took things at face value. If you were to take those characteristics and make a list of them, and then said, what does this communication look like? Your communication will change dramatically. Communication is essential to a good marriage relationship. Also a staple is nice. So, number next, forgiveness needs to be practiced. There is no doubt that there is an understanding of the importance of, there is an importance regarding forgiveness in the life of those who understand the presence of sin in our world and the great work that Jesus did in forgiving us. And trust me, whatever he forgave was larger than we would ever have to forgive in any marriage relationship. And yet he exemplified it and he practiced it. In other words, we forgive each other not because she's deserving of it and not because I'm better than her. We do it because we are forgiven by God. And if he'll forgive us that debt, we can forgive. And I'm not just talking about the little things. If Tammy and I had the time to tell you our full story, you probably would be aghast. But let me just put it this way. There was a time in our marriage that we had to forgive each other big things. And if it were not for forgiveness, we would not be here today, and we would definitely not be here anywhere as a couple. It requires us to be that seeks the well-being of the other over oneself. Oh, it takes the rebuilding of trust at times. And it doesn't mean that everything is forgotten. You know, sometimes we're spiritual elephants. We never forget. But it is a matter of recognizing that I'm going to move forward without carrying all of the mistakes that you've made on my back. It's about being forgiving. It's about, takes time. It doesn't always happen overnight. It is, it's simply put, it's recognizing and realizing that it's one of the most important steps, because every marriage is going to have a time in which forgiveness is essential. And we think that forgiveness applies to those little things. Well, I forgive you this, I forgive you this. Sorry, I burped, I didn't mean to. Right? It's about the big things. That's where forgiveness makes the biggest difference. In fact, in that, here's one of the things we've learned is transparency in a marriage relationship helps to fodder good forgiveness in the future. Any of you have a fire extinguisher in your home right now? When are you planning your fire? You're not, right? But you know that there's a potential, whether it's because of a vehicle that's parked in a garage, a stove, a fireplace, or something else, a candle, that there may be the chance, and you want to be able to react quickly. Well, transparency is a little bit of a fire extinguisher. That's where you are open and honest and upfront with each other all the time, not just in bad times. It's where you share about your day, it shares about your feelings, it shares about your fears, you share about your hopes and dreams, you share about your disappointments, and you're constantly in conversation. One, it's hard to be fully transparent and to have a lot of secret stuff to be forgiven of, but when she knows who I am all the time because of my willingness to talk to her, and I make a big mistake and I come to her, she says, well, I know who you are, and I know why you're coming here with this, and I can forgive you better, and here's why. Because you've all, let's take for something that maybe wasn't a directly attack on her, though I think there's some implications, but I come to her and I said, I need to tell you something. I've stumbled into watching pornography and I can't shake it. I need your help and I need your forgiveness because I have wronged you in that. And I've wronged God. That's sexual immorality. And she says, well, you louse. What happens to transparency? I keep it to my secret. Even if I know it's wrong, even if I don't want to do it, I don't have that help. But when I can be transparent about everything, when I'm going, I got a problem. I've got a fear. And that's not easy for me as a man to do, to say, I've got something that's going on here. But if that's the constant practice about that, it may be in regard to my electronic communications, right? Tammy and I had a policy. We had some really two couples in Denver, Colorado that are our bestest friends, and we did almost every Friday or Saturday night with them. And so we would text about, hey, are you available? If Tammy was going to text the men in that group, she always included me. She didn't just text one of the guys. And if I was going to text one of the ladies and say, hey, do you guys want to do dinner? I always included Tammy. It's not because there was anything inappropriate going on, but the thing was, we're going to ensure that it doesn't go on, right? There's a reason why some private messages are called private messages. And it's not that a private message is wrong in and of itself, but it might lead to other messages that probably shouldn't carry on. So simply put, we're going to be transparent. Here's the passwords to my devices. Pick up my phone, look at my laptop anytime you want. He's going to talk about, hey, I need to tell you what happened. Well, a few years ago, I asked Tammy, I said, here's the scenario. This was at the time I was in secular work, full-time secular work. I said, imagine if I came home from work and I said, I had an experience today. I said, my secretary walked into my office and dropped her coat and didn't have a stitch of clothes on and said, I want you. And she goes, well, I would accuse you of being a liar because I can't imagine that happening. And I said, should I tell you that? I said, I don't find her attractive. I don't find her appealing. I told her clearly, don't ever let this happen again. All those kind of things, should I tell you? Because my thought is, when I tell her, you know what her response is going to be? In fact, it was, you're getting a new job. I said, well, I'm not going to get a new job. I can't get a new job. I think probably there's a place to look for a new job. But the point was, I need to know that I can come to her and say, here's a mistake I've made. Here's something someone else has done that could impact us. Here's something you've done that's impacting us. Tammy has beautiful hair. Weekly, somebody comments on Tammy's beautiful hair. We were in Miami. A lady that didn't speak English at all went, you know, trying to tell her hair was beautiful. But Tammy has an inappropriate relationship with her hair. There's three in our relationship, me and Tammy's hair. She fights it all the time. A few months ago, she came in with a new style to her hair. And I will tell you, I think her hair is beautiful every way she wants to do it, for the record. But this was one of my less favorite. And she asked the question that every man hates. You already know what it is, don't you? What do you think? And I go, I think if the Packers really work hard, they can get back to the Super Bowl. I'm thinking about anything but what. And finally, I tap danced. And I, by the way, I have no problem voicing my opinion, but every once in a while I go, give your first thought a second look, okay? And I finally said, it's not my favorite. And she says, wow. And I'm like, I didn't. She goes, no. She goes, that must have been huge for you. Right? Now, I try not to walk in. Like, she'll go, do I have lipstick on my teeth? And I go, no. You know, I don't want to be that guy. But the point is what? To have that relationship where we have been talking all the time. And it's not seen as ugly. It's about being conversational. And when it comes to forgiveness, transparency goes a long way in helping that. Okay, running out of time. We've got two more. Number one has to do with intimacy. Tammy and I sometimes in our seminars will do a complete separate section where I could talk to the guys in the most uncomfortable conversation I ever have to have with a bunch of guys. And Tammy goes and has time with the ladies, which is always marked, and at least in the times that we've been within earshot, with lots of laughter. I have a group of men who are shell-shocked on the discussion of sexual intimacy, and Tammy apparently is telling stories she shouldn't be telling. But I will describe this story that she often tells because it best illustrates it. Tammy will tell you, and I don't say this pridefully, I'm just saying this is what she says, that Wayne is the more romantic one in the family. I'm the card, I'm the, hey, I got some great idea about doing something for our anniversary or for Valentine's Day. And it's not that she's not caring, she just doesn't operate that way. But I had to speak 2 days at a youth conference that was just on the other side of Denver, which meant I went over there in the afternoon, I spoke, I didn't get home till late, I had to get up early the next morning, get back over there, and I spoke all day, and I came home that Saturday night, and Tammy said, I don't know what, but I thought, I've got a great idea, I'm going to do something nice and romantic. She had heard me comment one time, I think it was actually, we'd seen it on a hotel or motel television about a spa that offered the hot rock massage. And I had commented, I think that would be great. So Tammy decided I needed a hot rock massage, but why pay for it when she could go to the park and get some rocks? So Tammy went to the park and got some of these big river rocks, and she says in retrospect she did not think all the way through the process because she thought, well, how am I going to heat these rocks? How about the microwave? Not realizing that is the potential that rocks will explode in the microwave, but these didn't. So she got them to the surface temperature of the sun in the microwave, and I got it home, and she had sent the kids off. They had the house to ourselves. She had laid this beautiful sheet over the bed, and there were these flower petals and candles, and I'm like, hey, we having company? I didn't know what was going on there. And she says, I'm going to give you a hot rock massage. Now, I will tell you, I didn't think through it either. I went, we should go for that plan. I like that. So she said that she got ready for it and realized, hey, wait a minute, they always have some kind of special massage oil. This was long before everybody had a holster full of essential oils with them at all times. And so she said, all I had was either cooking oil, or I did have some oil that comes like, not as a sunscreen, but, you know, sun tanning oil. So she chose that. She said, kind of fruity, coconutty, she'd do that. So she says, I put a little bit of that on my hands, and I'm like, and I'm just going to tell you right now, guys, it was everything I had dreamed it would be. But that was about to change. Because she reached over and she got the first rock, which was still extremely hot, and her hands were slippery. Which means she did not have full control, it slipped out of her hand, and it landed square in the middle of my bare, except for oiled, back. And in the words of the Apostle Paul, I bear on my body the brand marks, okay? It hit there, and I squealed like a stuck hog. She's trying to pick it up, but it's slick like a stuck hog. It's bouncing all over my back. If the kids had come in, they go, that is one freaky couple, because I'm going, woo, woo, woo. It was bad in there, okay? But for us, we think that that describes intimacy perfectly. It is not the way it is on the television and in the movies. God has given us sexual intimacy, certainly for a part of His cycle of reproduction, His law of each begat after its own kind, but He has blessed mankind with a pleasure aspect. We are both sexual beings. I find it interesting that in the description of Adam and Eve, we don't have how tall they were, how fat they were, the color of their skin, the color of their eyes, the color of their hair, but we have them described as one was male and one was female. Those are sexual designations. And the Apostle Paul said, this is an important part of marriage, designed by God to be practiced there. Don't keep it from one another. And even if you take a time away, don't take away too long, lest you be given to sexual immorality. It's not only, but it's an important part of marriage, but I need you to also understand this. It's not the most important part of marriage. When there is not sexual intimacy, physical touch, a marriage will struggle. a marriage that is based entirely on physical intimacy, it will fail. Because there are any number of things that can interfere with that. Health, life that comes along, married for a long time and things change within us physiologically. It is important. Don't confuse the act of sexuality with the only thing that sexual intimacy is. Sometimes it's an arm over a shoulder. Sometimes it's a hold in the hand. Sometimes, especially when we're younger, it may very well be that there are some things that are being neglected. And as one lady I recently saw, she goes, I want you to imagine this, that your husband is hungry. That's a God-given desire. And that each night you make dinner for him. And he likes your dinner. He likes it a lot. And then one night you said, I wasn't in the mood for cooking dinner. And you say it the next night, and the next night, and the next night. He has a natural God-given desire. You have been what satisfies that particular desire. And one day you say, what? I'm done with that. He's going to go for takeout if you're not careful. So this important part of marriage, which was to be expressed in and only in marriage, important. But there are times when passion isn't always the fashion. And it's why we have come to understand that sexual intimacy is a stair step into full intimacy. In other words, it's one of those things that joins us, but as we become mingled, it's not. We saw an article about an attorney and his wife in New York City that said they put sex on their calendar. I think they did it just to spite their kids, but that's just me. But they said the truth was every important thing in their life ended up on the calendar. And if that wasn't put on the calendar, it actually got forgot. I don't know. That seems to be, like I said, a little less than romantic. But the point was they were going to be intentional about it. But as you move along in life, it may be that what the regularity of the calendar, that changes for any number of reasons. And it's great when you can come to a place that says, hey, it's Friday. And she says, yeah, Tuesday of next week will work, right? In other words, it's not the only thing that matters. Really important, but not the most important thing. We want to encourage you to have a conversation with your spouse about your sexual intimacy. And the reason why is, I don't think it is right for Tammy and I, for that matter, a preacher or an elder, or in my opinion, even a clinician, a counselor, to give you the instructions for sexual intimacy. I'm convinced, we're convinced, that that is something to be discovered by two people on their own. Because your relationship is a whole lot different than other people's. It's supposed to be a process of discovery. And to give you too many details not only demeans it, but I think it may actually be prohibitive. So as you have that conversation about the things that you're comfortable with and the things that you're uncomfortable with and the things that you desire and the things that you'd prefer not, the things that you need and the things that you have to, all those kind of things, it will help in your marriage relationship. It's just for guys, that's really hard. Because about the only time we ever talk about that is in the doctor's office or on the playground, right? Everything's given a medical terminology and we're okay with it. Or we have some slang expression and it ends with a get it kind of joke. Have a conversation without your spouse. Intimacy is important. Finally, and of almost as much importance as the first thing that I shared, and that is this, that faithfulness matters. It really does. Nobody looks at political candidates and goes, I'm trying to decide between these two candidates, but this one's unfaithful. I really am inclined to go that direction. You know, the headlines of the newspaper does not say, local pastor faithful. There's no news in that. We always want to know that who's with who, but should be with who kind of things. That's what seems to be inappropriate, even in a world that is pretty inappropriate. Faithfulness matters. Unfaithfulness in any form always destroys, and don't just think in terms of sexual unfaithfulness. You can be unfaithful with your children. They can get all the attention in the world, and your spouse is now playing second fiddle to all of that. I understand kids bring a great responsibility, but you were partners before you were parents. In fact, it's your partnering that made you parents. Don't forget about the partner part, because one day those kids are going to scatter, and you're going to be stuck potentially with somebody you did not know because they have changed over the last 20 years. And you guys haven't had a conversation. You can have, you can be unfaithful with this. I would do it, but she always is difficult. She's starting to get to know me. But if I ask my phone, what is my name? She says, your name is Wayne, but because we're friends, I get to call you Your Majesty. Tammy will not call me Your Majesty. And my phone will tell me the weather outside, the movie times, what's happening in the news. And if I'm not careful, I find myself at our romantic date going, hey, I hope you are having a good time, emoji, 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 even though Tammy's sitting across the table because my phone has become my very best friend. You can be unfaithful with your pastimes, even those that are not inappropriate. Guys, you can be unfaithful with the guys that you play golf with every single weekend. Ladies, your particular activities, if you're constantly going, I go on vacation with my girlfriends, my besties, my husband doesn't like to travel like that, so I leave him behind, and that's every single summer. At some point in time, though it is not sexual unfaithfulness, and in and of itself may not be a sin, it is an unfaithfulness that destroys and picks at your marriage. And I've mentioned a couple of times, and should probably a couple hundred more, that there is no place for pornography in a marriage, individually, as a couple. I can show you economically, I can tell you psychologically, I can show you socially, and I most certainly can show you spiritually or biblically that it never pays off. I recently saw a statistic that said for every $1 spent in the multi-billion dollar industry of pornography, costs our society of a minimum, costs us $100 per dollar spent. So if it's billions of dollars, it's hundreds of billions of dollars, and that's just economically. If you have that going on in your life, find a way out of it as soon as you can, because faithfulness matters. I've got a little card here, and it's kind of a reminder to me about faithfulness. There was a young man, the story goes, and it's a true story. You can look it up on the internet, because everything on the internet is true. But this one is a young man, a computer programmer. He was living in Cleveland, Ohio. His father died. His mother asked if he would present the eulogy. The eulogy is when you get up and you speak well of somebody, not just the obituary, the facts and figures, but you tell. And so he began to write down the things that he wanted to say about his father, and he ran into a brick wall. He said, my father was a good man. He was a good father. He was a good husband, but he had no real accomplishment to his name, no distinguished military career. He hadn't climbed to the accolades of academia. He hadn't climbed the corporate ladder. He hadn't invented or discovered anything. There was nothing noteworthy about my father. He said, I thought how tragic it was that I'm getting ready to give a eulogy of my father was a good man, but I didn't have anything to say. And so as he racked his brain, he said something came to the surface. A trait that he did not see as common as it once was. In fact, it may be a trait that was failing and falling by the wayside. He said, my dad was a man of his word. If he told you that he would help you move on a Saturday at 9 o'clock, he'd be there at 8:45 with a box of donuts in his hand. If he told you he'd mow your grass or water your flowers while you were gone, you didn't have to call back and remind him. He asked you to. He said he would pick you up at the airport. He would be there faithfully. He said, my dad was a man of his word, and that is a great characteristic. So after he offered the eulogy, he decided that he wanted to share his father's legacy. And so he created these little business card-sized cards that simply say on them, because I said I would. The idea is that you would take that card, and if you offered to mow somebody's grass while they were out of town, you'd write on that card, "I'll mow your grass." And the reason why? Because I said I would. Because I'm going to be a person of my word. And that when I do that, and you return, and you give me the card back, and it's a reminder that I am becoming that. The whole thing exploded. The guy quit his job as a computer programmer. Now he travels all over the world talking about this idea. You can buy these little cards online. I'm going to put some at the back table, but here's what I think. Whether you do it literally or metaphorically, each and every day, you need to be handing that card to your spouse that says, "I love you because I said I would. I forgive you because I said I would. I'll be patient with you because I said I would. I'll be faithful to you because I said I would." It has nothing to do with who she is, what she does, what she deserves in any of that. It's me becoming faithful. I think it's really important to God because he uses the marriage illustration. We have marriage from the beginning of Scripture to the end and in between. And when God talks to Israel, his chosen people of that generation, he describes them as an unfaithful wife, an adulterous wife. And I think God is really bothered by our unfaithfulness, whatever form it takes in marriage, because it is a painful reminder of the fact that we're unfaithful to him in so many things. I told you last night that we believe that marriage has something more than just our happiness in this life. Here's what it is. A few years ago, I came into Tammy. I thought I was being really romantic. I had been involved in some Bible study, personal Bible study. I came up and I said, "You know what? I found something about heaven that I'm not going to like." She goes, "What in the world would you not like about heaven?" I said, "Well, Jesus said in heaven we're not married or given in marriage. I don't like the idea that it won't be Tammy and Wayne when we get to heaven." I thought that was kind of romantic. Here's how she responds. "I know, it'll be so much better." You know what? She's right. And here's why. Because she doesn't belong to me. She belongs to him. I have been given and been blessed to be a steward of something that belongs to him for 41 and a half years, and prayerfully, if I can work it out through negotiation, the rest of eternity as well. But you see, because I love her and I want what's best for her, the thing that I want most is the day that I take her hand out of my hand and put it into the hand of the person who loves her even more. And prayerfully, boy, that was great. I love the little music there. You saved me. I thought I was going to get all blubbery here. Thank you. I owe somebody a dollar. Give them a dollar, okay? But that's what this is about. This is about the happily forever after. God has given me someone to walk alongside of me, so when I stumble, she can help pick me up. When she stumbles, I can help pick her up. When I start veering off to the side, she can help realign me, and I can help to realign her. Somebody to walk alongside me in the difficulties of this life to get me to where he always wanted me to be. It wasn't in this mess. God created us to live in a perfect relationship with him, and we blew that. We messed it up with sin. And God said, "Here's a blessing that I have foreseen that will help you through those difficult times until I get you back where you belong." That's what God's blessings are, and marriage is one of those. When you begin to see marriage as more than just an agreement with two people, with reciprocal blessings, in which each agrees to go so far in return for something else, it'll always come up short. But when you see it within that grand scheme of God, and simply put, you say, "I'm going to do what I do in faithfulness because that's what God is asking of us." Tammy and I often say that marriage is all about the soul. this time S-O-U-L. It's all about our spiritual walk, and our spiritual walk is all about our marriage. And when those two are walking, no pun intended, side by side, we find that our marriages flourish. Our future in this life is grand, and the future in the next is guaranteed to be glorious. Could we talk more about it? Sure, we haven't even talked about those obnoxious kids. We hope you'll attend one of our First Step seminars sometime in the future. I want to thank you for being here. We stop abruptly. We want to be a good steward of your time. You've been kind enough to listen attentively and to sit there patiently. Our prayer is that something good has been said for you. And I tell you this, and I'm just not saying it as my concluding remarks. We frequently pray for the people who have attended our seminars. You will be part of that prayer list. We'd ask that you continue to pray for us, that God will give us doors of opportunity, and for our own marriage. We haven't worked through all those things. In fact, Tammy said she would never marry again. She didn't want to try to train another one all over again. So pray for us and for our work as we continue to remember you. I want to thank the church here for the invitation. David, I hope you don't reap the hazards of this from here on out. But David did a great job in organizing thing. Many of you are here because of the promotional work that was done that had nothing to do with Tammy and I, other than us being here. I'm thankful for each of you being here, for the leadership here and their willingness to allow us an opportunity. There's folks behind the scenes who are watching kids and did other things. You know, sound guys are over here working away, and I guarantee if everything went smooth, nobody complained. If that live stream anywhere glitched, they're going to be the first ones to hear about it. So I appreciate all of those efforts that were done. I'd like to close us with a word of prayer, and then David, if you have any remarks, I'll let you say those then. But I'd like to pray for all of us, and then I'll turn it over to him. Thank you guys, seriously, for being here.